From my point of view, those are minor details. When you experience the failure and when you inform them of the failure, and they, to a degree, are accepting the shipment in order to do the warranty repair. Let's see if anyone else has any other comments on this particular subject. Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Looks like no one else is sure. But I think you could claim that, hey, I informed you guys on December 15th or whenever it was that I had this failure and that I'm going to be sending it back to you for a warranty repair. And I discussed with you how I should mail it, how I should package it, what method of mailing I'm going to use, what address I'm going to send it to the ACE and so on. So, in theory, I'm just picking a number out of the air. In theory, as of December 15th, they knew that you had a warranty claim for repair required. And I think that's the one that's going to stick, Joe. I don't think you're going to run into a problem. And let us know how this all turns out. KC2QYW, K2RIW, Joe. Drag your feet in case anyone else has a comment.
Hey, Roger. Can I say one more thing before I go?
I'm hearing somebody else with a comment. Who was that?
It's K2CJE. Doesn't he have a receipt when he mailed it at the post office over?
K2GJE, okay. You also have a receipt as to when you mailed it. And so if the post office did something wrong and it took a lot longer to arrive, you've got records, but you already know when they got it into their hands. I don't think it's a problem. Back to you, Joe. KC2QYW, K2RIW.
Yeah, Roger, Roger. To answer the questions to the other station out there, thank you for looking out for me. Oh, yeah, of course, I send in everything. Double receipts, the original receipt with the Visa receipt attached to it. Quick question. I noticed on their website they say they give you 12-month warranty. So, Dick, do they go by the end of the month, like the end of February, or will they go by the date when I purchased last year on that date? Because, like I said, the receipt says the third, February the 3rd. That's of last year, you know? So do they go by the end of the 12th month? Or do they go by the customer's receipt? Back to you.
Hey, that's on frequency.
Somebody said on frequency. Who was that? And give us your full piece of information, go ahead.
Vito WA2PJF. We're just wasting time with this. All you have to do is very simple. If it's sent in by FedEx or UPS or United Postal System, you need to go to the post office or to FedEx office or to UPS and talk to the horse's head directly. You follow what I'm saying? And save all this time and guessing. Back to you, Dick.
Vito, he already checked. He knows the exact date at which it arrived at Yaesu. And he's really asking now, when does the warranty begin? In my opinion, the warranty begins the date that you purchased it, February 3rd. So, but you've mailed it back to them within that time period, so I don't think you've got a problem, Joe. KC2QIW, K2IW in the TechNet.
Once again, if I may.
Go ahead, I think it's Vito.
All right, then what about getting on the phone or emailing? On the phone is a better idea, unless you go by walk there, and contact the manufacturer directly and specify whom you are and what you've done. And these are the people, not us, that can give you the correct answers. And then you'll know where you stand, whether it's good or bad. That's what I'm thinking, unless I'm wrong. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, Vito. I think your suggestion is if Joe wants to be double darn sure, he can call them on the telephone, Yaesu this is, and have a discussion of, I bought this so-and-so radio on February 3rd, 2016. I had this particular failure. I communicated with you by email on December 15th, Sam. I'm going to mail it to you. I mailed it to you. The shipper confirmed to me that it was in your hands on January 27th. And so, is there anything else I have to do to make sure I'm experiencing the full warranty benefit? I guess you could have a telephone call with that information if he wants to be double down sure. I'm not sure it's required, but if Joe is losing some sleep over that, that's a possible suggestion, which that's my rewording of what I think Vito was saying. KC2 QYW, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, roger that, buddy, roger that. I'm just waiting for the, I sent them out an email, so I'm just waiting for the return email. And, you know, during the week I'm working and, you know, I don't have a cell phone, you know, to call you to, you know, when I'm on my break. But I guess I'll get back to you guys about this and see what happens, you know. So, but I don't think I'm wasting my time, you know, asking Dick this question. You know, this is what we were all here for, you know. So okay, back to the net.
Good luck with that, Joe. And I think other people have gone through that procedure like you are going through, and I haven't heard a complaint. So the ham radio vendors seem to be doing a pretty good job of treating the hams pretty well. They sort of have to, because we amateurs talk to each other. And if somebody has a bad experience with a particular vendor and starts telling all of his fellow hams, that can certainly affect their sales in the future. So they know they better treat us well. Next person on the list was Doug, W-A-2-S-A-Y. And I guess you must be coming in on the eastern input. You're sounding very good these days. You're putting out a lot of RF energy there, Doug. You must be using a pretty good antenna. W-A-2-S-A-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the TechNet.
QRIW and everybody else. Okay, this is WA2SAY. A couple of things here. First, I would like very much if, Dick, if you would read your email and respond to it when you get a chance. No rush. Next thing, I have one of the questions in the email, is, and I'm going to put it to the net here. I'm going to put up some roof antennas, you know, directional antennas, which will include 6 meters and 2 meters. And I'm wondering whether it's worthwhile to put up a tri-bander or a five-bander for the bands between 14 megahertz and 20 megahertz, 28 megahertz, because of the miserable band conditions and what is predicted to be continually miserable band conditions for about the next 4 or 5 years. So my question is it worth spending the money for that kind of an antenna, or just forget about it? So that's the first question. The second question is a lot easier, I think, or maybe a lot harder. I am talking to you from a Yaesu FT1900 radio, and I have lost the programming disc for it. It's a not 15-1900, not. And I've tried. What is it called? Quirk. I can't think of the name. Crisp, something like that. Anyway, and it comes up with a mistake. So if anybody has a copy of the. Of the software, I would like to get it. If I have to buy another copy, it's $25. Back over to that. WA2SAY here.
Yeah, Doug lives in Rocky Point, and he's about to put a number of antennas on the roof of his house, a relatively low roof. I think it's like 20 feet above the ground. Doug is unable to climb onto his roof for a whole bunch of reasons. So Doug is looking for a volunteer who will be able to establish some antennas on his roof for 2 meters for sure. 2 meter, he would like some 2 meter horizontally polarized EID, a vertically polarized antenna, and the installation becomes quite simple if it's only VHF he's installing. But it would be a considerably bigger installation to put in something like a tri-bander to cover 10, 15, and 20 meters, we'll say. And so, because we know that the sunspot cycle is going to be fairly unfavorable for the next few years, is that heroic effort to put up that tri-bander, a much bigger antenna compared to his VHF antennas, is that effort worth it? So, of you guys who have got HF experience, I don't have much HF experience. With the decrease in the sunspot numbers these days, are you seeing any openings on 2015 and 10, or almost none? That's sort of what Doug is asking. If you've got any information along these lines, please give us your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
WHSCDL, I got a question.
Go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, I play around with HF. What comes to mind is a simple dipole antenna, Doug, if you want to do it that way. Just to figure out what your objective is, I'm assuming you're not a contester, just a casual user. In other words, you don't want to be a big gun, running a lot of power and big beams and towers and all that stuff. You just want to, you know, dabble around. I just want to clarify. Is that right?
You've got it, Doug.
Yeah, basically, you're right. I presently have an antenna, a wire antenna, which unfortunately, due to the nature of the lot that I'm on, favors north-south propagation, not east-west. And it doesn't really, point at Europe or anything like that. So I'm thinking about putting up something on the roof. I need to get some VHF stuff up on the roof anyway. But I really have been listening around on 20 and 15 and 10, and I'm not hearing very much. And I'm wondering whether it's worthwhile when I put an antenna, a rotary antenna on the roof for VHF, which will include 6 meters, not just 2 meters, whether I should spend the money and the time and the effort to put up a tri-bander or a five-bander to go from 20 to 10 meters. So, yes, I have a wire up. It's not very high, but the only thing I'm hearing anything on is 40 meters. Back to that.
Let me just ask a couple more questions. Is that okay?
I was going to turn it back to you, Andy. And when you said that you recommend you put up a dipole, was that for 80 meters or 10 meters? You didn't say dipole for what band. But what's your guess as to how often he's going to see openings and he's going to get enough bang for the dollar out of that tri-bander to make it worthwhile? To A2CDL, K2RIW, you got it, Andy.
Okay. Yeah, well, I don't have my beam up right now, but I'm active on 75. There's a bunch of nets that are on, but I've got involved with the AM nets, amplitude modulation. It seems to be a growing phase, and there's nets on weekends. Just to mention, if you want to dabble with that. I'm not a DXer either, more so. They're just a casual user. But, I don't know the conditions of your roof and how hard it is to put a small beam up. If you wanted to do that, go that route. You already have a dipole up. You could put up just well, there's many things you could do, of course. You could put up just a long wire, a random length wire antenna and use an antenna tuner and adjust it for the frequency that you want to operate on. And, that'll work if you want to do it that way. I'm assuming you're not running that much power either. I would think 100 watts or so. 2 meters and 6 meters and And those frequencies, by the way, if in the conditions in the summer, when the band opens up, that on the sideband mode, you can have a lot of fun with that. You run a little bit of power, and that would be worthwhile. As far as HF, since you don't want to do any real DX work, it's not too difficult. Let me let it drop a second. I'm not sure.
Repeater, timeout.
Okay, I realized I wasn't listening to myself because I was on the wrong frequency. Okay, let me just make sure I have the beep. What I would think of it, if it's not too difficult to put a beam antenna up to HF, if it's feasible, go for it. If you can find one that's not expensive, because you could spend a lot of money just on beam antennas. If your roof is easy to get to, if you just want to put something small up on the chimney. As an example, Chriscraft makes the MA5, which is it's a relatively compact, small beam antenna. It's got some mixed reviews, only because it's manufactured by MFJ, and MFJ's quality is not the greatest since they took over from Chriscraft. Chriscraft used to be a lot better quality, but the beam's performance is good, and it would fit on a small mast that you can actually mount to chimney straps. With a small rotor, you don't need something really heavy, and it's not a gigantic beam. So, just as an example, I'm mentioning that if you want to do that for HF. If you listen in on 75, even right now as I speak, there's activity, and there's a lot of it. I see it on my pan adapter is really moving a lot. Which shows a lot of activity on 75. So there's always activity on that band, especially at night. Let me see. Hopefully, we got enough information there. Dick, I'll give it back to you if you pass it to Doug. Doug, you get the CDO.
You left to make a comment.
Andy, in order to give a little clarification here, you're using a dipole on 80 meters. You talked to the antique modulation people, which I think is around 3,900.
Repeater, timeout.
My question is, this is a ordinary 80-meter dipole or a long wire with a fancy antenna tuner. How many watts are you running? And does 80 meters open up almost every single night? It almost doesn't depend on the sunspot cycle. As you can tell, I haven't used 80 meters in a long time, so I need your information, Andy. So that'll help us with the decision. If you can get a whole lot of HF operation out of 80 meters out of a dipole, that would make life a little bit simpler. So how many watts are you putting into that? W2CDL, KQLAW, wait for the beeps.
Okay, I heard someone, but I'm not sure who that is. I'm only running 100 watts right now. I will be running more power eventually, but I don't have to. And I work up and down the East Coast without too much difficulty. There's a group of guys that are up in Massachusetts. There's a group of guys down in Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, that are always on every night. It's regardless of sunspot cycles and all that. These guys are always on. And there's a net, there's a military net at 5 o'clock in the morning, if you want to get up that early, on Saturdays. There's an AM, which is a net that I check into. It's called an AM carrier net. It's on Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock. And there's another one starting at 5 o'clock on, this is all on 75 meters. And there's quite a few check-ins. Sometimes there's 15, 20, 25 people check into these nets, and you can hear most of them. So, with a simple dipole antenna running 100 watts, that's all you need to have fairly good contacts with that. You don't have to be so elaborate. If that helps, Dick, back to you.
Top. And WS2N. Okay. I'm hearing Paul second, but there's another person trying to give us information, and his voice keeps breaking up, and so we're not getting a complete call or anything like that. Who is that other person? Give it another try, and you better speak softer, because maybe you're over-modulating the repeater. K2RIW.
K2RIW. K6 Delta Papa Zulu. If I'm allowed to talk on a technet, I can... AM 80.
Okay, my understanding, Hal, is that no, you're not allowed to use the repeater, and your voice is breaking up quite often, so I just barely could figure out who you are and what you're saying. Paul, WS2N, you had some information. Go right ahead, Paul.
Good, Dick.
Okay, yeah, if Doug wants to stick with the wire antenna like Andy recommended earlier, you know, the cheap way, yeah, you could go with the G5RB Junior. That's what I have. And that'll work 10 through 40. But if he, you know, really wants 80, that's what I do. I have a separate antenna, a separate dipole for just for 80. But the G5R B Junior is inexpensive ham radio outlet. That's where I got it. It's like under $50. So it worked good up until last week when a branch kind of broke the end of the ladder line right where it ties in. I'll have to go out and resolder that. But otherwise, you know, I've had it probably three or four years now. It works really good. And as far as 80 meters, that's been open, like Andy said. In fact, I just worked Columbia. I haven't gotten out to South America in a long time, but just worked Columbia. You know, they have that DX window on 80 on lower sideband. Although I like CW. If, you know, you go up to that DX window, there's always somebody there at night. Back to you there, Dick.
Yeah, a question I've got for both Andy and Paul is that my recollection was that at high noon on 80 meters on a sunny day, you get a lot of D-layer absorption, so the band sort of goes dead. But almost every night, that band is wide open regardless of the sunspot cycle. That's my recollection. Did I remember that correctly? I'm going to first ask Andy and then Paul in that order. W2CDL, K2LIW.
N2EL with a couple of comments.
Okay, very good. And yeah, Rich, N2EL has also been on 75. I call it 75. as I speak, right now I'm listening to activity that's on. I'm actually 3875, which is one of the AM frequencies. I've gotten more interested in amplitude modulation lately, but I, of course, come on sideband also. So, to answer your question, yes. A lot of activity at night. You just want to use a simple wire antenna, that'll be fine. And 100 watts is good. Of course, you can run more power if you wanted to, but... for this band, and of course, well, we didn't speak about 40 meters, which also has activity during the day. There's a net that's been around for many, many years called the East Cars Net, which you can check into. That's a sideband net, actually, and you have a number that you can get. So that's another example. I'm not going into the whole detail, but the bottom line is, if you want to play around, Doug, with some just a wire antenna, or just tune around. If you're not receiving much on 75, then there's a problem which you need to look into, because simply with a resonant dipole antenna or just a long wire, you should be able to receive as well as I am. And I'm receiving a lot of stations. So maybe look into that if you're not receiving anything, or if it's... Well, if it sounds like your antenna may not be resonant, Dick, back to you. WHCDO.
I'm in KD2FIU.
Okay, I've got a further question for Andy. Then I'm going to go to Paul, Rich, and FIU in that order. Andy, the D-layer absorption on 80 meters that I talked about, it's there at high noon. When does that really start? You start hearing, does the 80-meter band start going dead about 9 in the morning, or maybe 10 in the morning through high noon, and then until 5 in the afternoon before it comes back to life? These are some guesses as to this D-layer absorption on 80 meters. Roughly what hours of the day do you experience that? W2CDL, K2RIW.
Okay, I don't really have a definite answer because I'm not on doing the times during the day that that the D-layer absorption is occurring. Most of the time when I'm on, and especially, I'm on mostly at night and a little bit during the day in the morning, but not usually in the afternoons. I don't know exactly what time it starts. I could look that up. Or anyone could look it up, actually, and find out what it is. But regardless, there's still the local activity is always there. And what I mean by that is guys that are operating up and down the East Coast. I can work stations, as I said, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Maine, Pennsylvania, and so on. And, but just about any time during the day, without too much difficulty. DX-wise, like you say, the band conditions would have an effect on that. But I'm not a DX-er. I'm just a local guy right now. So I don't have a definite number, but I can find out if you want to. Go ahead, Dick.
Good information, Andy. Right now, we've got four people lined up to give information in this order. WS2N, N2EO, FIU, and EJ in that order. So, WS2N, go ahead, Paul, with your information.
Waiting for a tone. I pretty much want to say what Andy said. Daytime. I always did it this way. Daytime was 20, and nighttime was 80. And then when my radio quit working on 20... I switched over to 40, and that's a good daytime one as well. But you kind of lose that at night, and then 80 comes up. So that's, you know, to me, you need both a daytime and a nighttime. So that's the way I think of it, 20 or 40 in the daytime, and definitely 80 at night. And so that's all I'm going to say. You know, you got 10 meters and 15. They're always going to be problematic. Some of the walk bands, they're always very good, 30 meters, 17. And this antenna pulls in all of them from 10 to 40, but it doesn't really go on 80. You can get some kind of an extension kit for 4, but I don't need that. I just have the independent one dipole for 80 meters. Back to you there, Dick. WS2.
I thank you, Paul. Now, Rich is next. N2EO, go ahead with your information, Rich.
Okay, take N2EO. Well, during sunspot lows, 20, 15, 10 are very poor. And 80 and 40 and 160 come alive in sunspot lows. And the reverse is true when we have sunspot highs. 20, 15, and 10 come alive. And 160, 80, and 40. Too much absorption. I would recommend not putting a big effort into the higher frequencies. But like Andy said, 80, 40, they're good bands. I don't work 160, but I'm sure that's a good band. You just need to pick it up the antenna. A wire antenna is fine. And, Dick, you know what I'm on. I use this Cobra compact antenna that you and Barry put up for me. It's excellent, but you have to use it with, supplied with a ladder line, and you have to use it with an antenna tuner. But it works fine. And I do have an amplifier here. It's a kilowatt amp, but it's not totally necessary. It is better. But, you know, it's not necessary. You would put it, Dick, not a showstopper. And, oh, by the way, I'm on East Gars. I have an East Gars number. Their frequency every day, 7255. Back to net, and to you.
I thank you for that information, Rich. Next person on the list was George, KD2FIU. Go right ahead, George, K2LAW on the TechNet.
Thank you, Dick. Something that I've been looking into myself, for one thing is that as the sunspot cycle is going toward a null end over here, the higher bands don't emphasize, it's just that more operators are populating them. And I believe the operator's original question had to do with whether it was worth it to have directivity and could receive direction on the higher HF bands. If you want to do that, and you can do that, you will have less activity. It will not be as often. The conditions will not exist as often as they would. You would have less operators. Let me recycle this. Dick, am I coming through?
You're coming through beautifully. Go right ahead, George.
Okay, and so what will happen is the operator's original question was it worth it? It would be worth it if you want to meet less operators worldwide. How much gain, how much received directivity and null of adjacent signal you want, it could still work. Not with the population of people and with the ease toward the height of the sunspot cycle. So what happens is that in my opinion, and I'm doing a lot of reading on this because I'm into this about 3.5 years, that you're not going to be able to DX on 10 meters with any kind of simple antenna. Let me recycle it. You'll need directivity, you'll need gain, and it will work. And it'll work on 15, and it'll work on 20. My suggestion would be is, take your favorite band, with simplicity, with the most gain, and the most received directivity that you can get out of it. KD2FIU. Thank you, sir.
Okay, I thank you, George. Next person on the list with information is Eric, KE2EJ. And how big is your HF antenna, and how often do you get a chance to use it, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW, the tech man.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, there's a bunch of guys that I talk to on AM meetings in the morning. They usually start about 5:45. And, you know, we have some stations in Maine, up at the top, and in Canada. Actually, my buddy, W1BKR, he's one of that group there, on every morning. And what I was going to say is that you're basically right about it. You know, in the morning, it comes 9 o'clock, 9:15, it starts to fall off. And by the time 10:30, 11, it's around, it's gone. It's all noise. It doesn't really start to wake up until like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. I did want to say each car is a good place to go on 40 meters. That's at 7255. You know, we find somebody there. I'm going to drop for a second. And I use an R7, actually. I like the variable. I don't necessarily agree with the previous guy's assessment, but everybody's entitled to their opinion. I find that the vertical is just fine. I don't have to worry about beaming over the pole and stuff like that, but yeah, there are times that you wish you had that kind of a little bit of gain that you don't get out of the vertical. That's fine. And, you know, 20 meters is an afternoon, early evening kind of band before it kind of gets weird. And I'm beginning to wonder about the original question, gentleman's receiver, because even with a non-resonant antenna, you should be hearing stuff. So that's what I got to say. K2RIW, K2J.
WS2M. I just worked the guy in California. So it's open now, Dick. Have a quick comment?
Okay, so Paul just worked a guy in California, I guess on 80 meters, and somebody said they want to make a quick comment. Who was that?
All right, please, K1MJM, mic number two. We just put the winter field day. We use an NA5, like Andy recommended, and off-center fed Wyndham, and in the last 18 out of 24 hours, we made over... good contacts on 20, 40, and a little bit of 80. That's all. Back over to you, the K1 MJM clear.
I thank you, Mike number two, as well as Eric, George, Rich, and Paul. Got lots of good information in there. And maybe Doug needs some more fills. So this gives you a little bit more of an impression, Doug, as to... what antennas are going to do what on what bands in this particular sunspot cycle. Maybe it'll help you a little bit as to how much of a physical or dollar of investment you want to make on your antennas you're about to put on your roof. To B2SAY, take your time and ask any of these guys any further questions if you like. To B2SAY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
W2SAY here. Yeah, I guess what I'm... hearing is that everybody else is saying that there's not much activity above 20 meters, and there's not a heck of a lot of activity on 20 meters anymore either because of the lousy sunspot cycle. I have heard a little, very little bit on 20 meters. I'm hearing very well on 40 meters, and I'm actually getting out sometimes. Only got 100 watts on the air right at the moment. I do have a linear, but I don't have a tuner. I do have let's put it this way, I'm not set up with the linear at the moment, but I do have 100 watts on the HF and on the low VHF. So I'm not quite sure what the answer is. I think the answer is don't go out and buy a $500 or more tri-band or five-band antenna and put it on a roof. It's not worth the trouble. I guess that's the impression I'm getting. Let me drop it. Oh, anyway, I thank everybody. Right at the moment, as I say, I have to wire up. It's a Spyro. It's designed for 40 and up, 40 through 10, and it works for 40 through 10. I'm not sure I can tune it on 75. I believe with my MFJ tuner, I cannot tune it on 75. I also have a little tuner... from LJ, is it? I think I'm going to try that and see whether I can load the thing onto 75. That would be useful. I really don't see I will ever have enough wire, enough space to put up a wire for 160. And I can probably get something to resonate on 75 if I really try. So thanks, everybody. Let me drop it one more time. I had one other question which I hope somebody can help me with, and that's the question is, I'm looking for software for an FT-1900 two-meter radio, the one that I'm talking to you on now. I've lost the software that came with it, or that I had to buy with it, whichever, and to replace that, it would cost me $25. If somebody would be so kind as to send me a copy of the software to program this doggone radio. It's not a Pro. It's an N. It's a FT-1900, not Pro. FT-1900 Yaesu. And I've tried Chirp, and Chirp gives me an argument. So I would like to have the software for this radio. Over to Net, WA2SAY.
5 minutes software.
When it comes to your 40-meter antenna being used on 80 meters, by way of the so-called Brown and Woodward curves, and the Brown Woodward curves are available to you at amateurradio.tv, and I think they're also available to you on the K1MJM mic number 2 website, which is LimeRockTechNet.com. By Brown and Woodward curves, I mean, if you know the length of the wire and the diameter of the wire and the band that you're operating on, exactly what impedance you're going to get. A 40-meter dipole, which is way too short for 80 meters as far as simple resonance is concerned. You go to that Brown and Woodward curve, it'll probably tell you, let me drop. The resistive component will probably tell you the resistive component is not 73 ohms as it would be at full half wave. It's going to be, let me pick a number, 25 ohms of resistance. But the really bad one is the reactance. The reactance is going to be, let me pick a number, 1,000 ohms of capacitive reactance. But because you know the length of your antenna, therefore you know by way of the Brown and Wood curves exactly what impedance it's going to be, that gives you two or three possible approaches. The fact that your dipole is too short gives you difficulty about impedance matching, gives you no difficulty when it comes to gain and efficiency of the antenna. The infinitesimal dipole never loses more than half a dB from a full-length dipole. That's I'm talking now about gain, efficiency, effective capture area, all of that. As long as you can force it into resonance by way of the impedance matching network, a dipole, no matter how short it is going to give you the same amount of gain for that altitude and the same amount of efficiency, same amount of capture area as a full half-wave dipole. Lots of people don't believe that. Where the impedance is thoroughly predictable, let me drop. You can either put an L network on the antenna, right at the antenna if you want to, a simple L, inductor and capacitor, which the exact values of it will be given to you by way of the, all of a sudden I can't think of the name of the program. What's the name of that college in California? Stanford, it's not Stanford.
Berkeley.
What was it again, Eric?
Berkeley.
That's it, Berkeley. You Google the word Berkeley and impedance match. You'll get the Berkeley program. Berkeley wants to know what's the impedance of your source, that's your transmitter, 50 ohms. What's the impedance of the load? Brown and Woodward's going to tell you the resistive component and the reactive component, and what's the frequency you're operating at. You give the Berkeley program those three pieces of information and press go. In about 3 seconds, you get 16, 1-6 answers. An L network, an upside down L network, a T network, a pi network, an LT, an L pi, and so on. Choose the one that you like. It gives you the exact values in microhenries or in millihenries, microhenries, and picofarads, and so on. And so to homebrew a impedance matching network to make the antenna perfect is very doable. If you got a large enough tuning range on your antenna tuning, you can do it. But there's a catch. Let me drop. That approximate impedance that I guessed at, 1,000 ohms of capacitive reactance and 25 ohms of resistance, that's a huge visual. It's a 25 to 1 standing wave ratio, so to speak. And if you're feeding the antenna with open wire line, and you've got enough range on your antenna tuner, that's easy. Would work like a charm. But a 25-to-1 standing wave ratio with ordinary coax is going to give you a lot of extra loss in the coax. So therefore, if you don't do the impedance matching at the antenna, life is kind of difficult. So the fact that you don't have enough property for either 80 meters or 160, you do once you understand the real tuning. So you've got a number of possibilities there. From what I'm hearing, I'm agreeing with you, Doug, all the effort to put a tri-band beam for 2015 and 10 at the bottom of the sunspot cycle doesn't sound like it's worth it unless somebody gives you one for free and gives you the antenna installation for free. I know you've got the rotators that can turn that, the TP mount or whatever you're going to put on your roof. It's going to have to be quite a bit stronger to support the tri-bander if you decide to go that way. Already you're going to be getting quite a bit of a moment of inertia out of the 6-meter beam. Back to you for any more questions, fills, or whatever, Doug. W-A-2-S-A-Y, K-2-R-I-W in the tech net.
Thanks, Dick, and thanks to the guys on the net. I think we have agreed on most everything. The other question that I had raised, and perhaps I didn't get through with it, I'm looking for the software to program the Yaesu FT1900, not Pro, because I have low bear and I can only tune to this frequency, which I'm talking to you on this radio, but I can't tune to anything else. The tuning doesn't work. So I need the software. I don't know why it forgot, but it forgot. W-A-2-S-A-Y, back to that, and I'll be listening out.
Dick, I have a suggestion for Doug. W-A-2-C-D-O.
Wait for the beeps, and you got it, Andy.
Okay, I just wanted to jump in. Doug, try downloading the software online. You might get lucky if you do a Google search for the software. I've done that before on the internet, and I've been successful in finding free of charge software for most radios that are offered. I think CHIRP, C-H-I-R-P was the word you were looking for, which is a programming software. But try online if you have not. You might get lucky on that. Dick, back to you.
Yeah, Doug did say that he tried using CHIRP, and CHIRP gave him an inoperative indication of some kind. So Doug is looking for the software on a FT1900 radio so that he can reprogram it. And if anybody's willing to volunteer that, just in case he's not able to find it as a download on the internet. Anybody out there have that particular piece of software, give us a call. That is right now. K2RIW in the TechNet. Go ahead, Eric.
No, I just looked it up. There's a bunch of them, actually, but they're all free. G4 HFQ has programming software for the 1900. Actually, that's a good one. Let's see. Amazon has the software, radio has the software, but I think the G4FQ, HFQ is probably the way you want to go. It's free.
Let's see if Doug understood that. You need a fill on that one, Doug?
I got that. G4HFQ, Hotel Quebec. I got to look that up. That would help a lot. And yes, I did try CHIRP, and that fails. So I'm going to look up the G4HFQ. Thank you very much. And I will be listening out. Thank you to everybody on the net that helped out tonight. I appreciate it. W-A-2-S-A-Y will be listening out.
Hi, just for the information, if you do a Google search for FT1900 programming software, it'll be right there. It'll be the first thing on the list.
Very good, Eric. Doug, you're using your FT1900 right now to talk to us, as you said. I'm guessing it's putting out 30 watts or something like that. I'm curious what you're using for an antenna. By my standards, you're over the hill, quite far away from me in, all of a sudden I forgot the name, Rocky Point. I'm hearing you on the input as you talk through the Eastern repeater. I'm wondering how I'm hearing you so well. What is the antenna you're using on that one, Doug? H2SAY, H2RIW.
be surprised. SWR meter, I'm putting out about 30 watts into a coil which is standing on top of the remote side of a computer which is sitting in my ham shack, which is a room in the house. I be about 5 feet above the floor, so I'm amazing out like that.
5 feet
above.
What was that? Yeah, you got to talk a little bit softer, Doug. You did jump out of the machine, but I was listening to you on the input, so I heard everything. So the antenna's 5 feet above the floor. I'm guessing on the first floor of the house in Rocky Point. I shouldn't be hearing you that well with 30 watts. Well done. Maybe with any further comments on all of the above, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW and the Tech Man.
WA2SAY, WPKWA. Check your email, Doug, and I sent you what you needed. W2KWA. Sorry to interrupt.
W2KWA. Give us some more words. You don't have to be that brief. Did you send something to Doug, like the software he's looking for? Over to you.
I sent him the FP-1900 command to package from the gentleman in the UK. So just open up your email, click on it, open it, download it, and you're good to go. You got the cable, you'll be ready to go, no problem.
Hey, just say why, that's wonderful. I don't know how you got my email address. I don't know if it's in QRZ, maybe it is. Well, I really appreciate that, and I will take a look and find it. Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. I don't know what I did with the disc. I have the cable, obviously. I have the disc someplace, but I tore a place apart a few days ago, and I couldn't find it. WA2SAY, back to that.
Okay. We've got a little bit of time left over. Anyone else got any further questions on any subject? Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
KD2FBU, Dan, I have a question.
Okay, I heard KB2FBU. Sounds like Foxtrot Bravo Uniform, Dan. And I heard another person. Who was the other person?
K2CJE, Ed.
Okay, we got you, Ed. So, Dan, go right ahead with your first question.
Okay, this is along the same lines of what you guys were just talking about. I'm trying to get up on 80 meters to do regional NVIS communication. And I'm in Brooklyn, I'm in a small apartment. I have done a bit of research, and I've built an antenna called a W3EDP, which is like an N-FET ZEP with a 4-to-1 balun on one end that's fed with some ladder line. That ends up being, one side of the ladder line is a counterpoise, 17 feet of ladder line going to 64 feet of single wire, and I'm going to drop. Okay, and the problem that I'm having with this is I'm able to listen in pretty much. I get a lot, I don't think I've talked all day. I'm able to listen in and pick people up, but my SWR is really high. I'm new to this, so I don't really know much about what to do. I got an SWR meter from ARRL, I think one that they recommended. I can't even remember where I bought it. But they don't even register on the SWR. And I have, what I'm on is a FT-897 Yaesu. It's got the AT-897 tuner attached to the side. And here's my question, basically. I don't want to take up too much time, but sometimes the SWR dips in a little bit, and it'll come down to like somewhere where, I can't remember the numbers, but it'll register on the SWR handheld meter, and I'll be able to see it come in. Most of the time, it's just off the charts. It doesn't even register. So I'm wondering, do I need a different tuner to bring this thing in, or am I just, do I just need to, when I built this antenna, I made it. It's a recipe, and I made the balun. I tried soldering, and maybe that's not working. Maybe I didn't do a good job on that. I just want to hear, do I need a better tuner? I'm gonna drop now and listen for answers. Thank you.
Did I understand it properly? The latter line is connected to one single wire.
Dan, what you've got is the W3EDP design, and you followed his instructions. I think you said he wants 17 feet of open wire line feeding it, and said the ZEP-like antenna. Did he claim any particular standing wave ratio? And the standing wave ratio he claimed, and that's with the balloting device, and he probably recommended a balloting device, and that's the one that you're using. So what did he say the standing wave ratio should be? It sounds like you're getting a very high standing wave ratio, which does sound like there's an error somewhere to be corrected. Take your time and give us some information on that one, Dan. KB2FBU, K2LIW on the TechNet.
I think it was designed in 1938, and I've not seen what the standing wave ratio should be. I found a couple of places where there's a recipe for this antenna, and they say that with a tuner it can resonate on 80 meters, but it's supposed to work better on the lower bands. And I haven't heard anything on the lower bands. It picks up on 40, and I can't be heard on 40, but I haven't really messed with trying to tune it that much on 40 because I'm really interested in getting on 80 meters. I want the regional communication. So I don't really have an answer to that question. I did suspect that I have, have built it incorrectly, and I just don't want to take the whole thing down and try and go through it again. I could buy a 4-to-1 Balun. I think I want a voltage Balun. I'll drop. That's all the information I have, pretty much.
Sounds like Eric has got some information for you. Wait for the beeps, and you got it, Eric.
I just wanted to say, I have one of those tuners on my 897. It really doesn't have a lot of range. I think it's only like 5-to-1 or 6-to-1. But what I would suggest is before he does anything, find somebody with an antenna analyzer or a VNA and take a look at it to see where you're at. And don't forget, 80 meters is a very wide band, and you're not going to get an antenna that tunes across the whole thing. So you really want to start there before you start changing anything. K2LIW, K2J.
The Balun that you're using right now, Dan, what kind of a Balun is it? And does it have a coax input and two wires coming out of it? And where are those two wires going, in your particular case, coming out of the Balun? You've got it, Dan. KB2FBU, K2LAW.
W2B, calling this.
What I've got is an air-wound Balun. It's got two wires. There is an SO239 at the bottom, and then it's wrapped, 12 wraps around a piece of PVC pipe. And then one of the wires tucks back down through the coil, and connects to one of the terminals on the 239, on the jack, the coax jack, and the other one, I think it was almost a year since I built this thing. I'm only bringing it up because you guys were talking about 80 meters. I obviously have to spend some time getting back up on this and getting more information, but that's pretty much what it is. It's an air wound balance, just wire. Yeah, and then one end of it goes up to the end set, to the ZEP wire. Listening.
Yeah, I think I can picture it. So the end set ZEP is one of the leads coming out of the Balun. The other lead coming out of the Balun really is going back to the coax shield, most likely. And therefore, the whole coax shield is the counterpoise for that antenna. In the case of an end set ZEP of the right length, that technique works very well. When I say the right length, really what I mean is that almost any length that's not an odd number of quarter wavelengths. If the end-fed ZEP wire is an odd number of quarter wavelengths, that gives you a very low impedance input by comparison to all other lengths. And therefore, the floating counterpoise is not going to work so well. But when you're getting a very high impedance out of the antenna, because it's either a even number of half wavelengths, an even number of quarter wavelengths, and and said, therefore you're seeing a very high impedance, and the counterpoise is more than adequate in that case, just the shield of the coax, as long as the balun is giving you a big enough step-up ratio. And the particular balun